right. My name is Megan Flater, and it is December 17th, 2012. Am I right on the date? Okay, good. And I am sitting and interviewing Brian Esselman. Brian, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Brian Esselman.
Great. And we are going to be talking about the 2011 protests at the state capitol regarding the budget repair bill. And first we're going to start with Brian's own background, though. Brian, if you could start, what made you choose to attend graduate school?
Mostly I chose to come to grad school because I was needing a change in life for a variety of reasons, and it was something I'd toyed around with for a lot of years, but I was absolutely convinced that research was not for me. And I remember having several long conversations with professors when I was an undergrad about how, oh no, I'll never enjoy research and I'd never go to grad school. And turns out I was wrong about all of that, but it took me a few years to sort of think that this was something I might be interested in, and so I decided to come back. And the main driving force is I just kind of wanted to get smarter.
Okay. All right, that works. Where was it that you went as an undergraduate?
I actually went here.
Okay.
I started as a freshman in the fall of 95, and with the exception of a couple of months here and there, I've managed to stay in Madison for that whole time. And at this point, I now have 4 degrees from Wisconsin,
Okay. Which
I think puts me in a pretty small subset of folks, because I've been around a long time.
Okay. All right. That works. Why was it that you chose to study UW-Madison?
Partially because I love UW, and I have for a very long time. And I decided as a fifth grader, when I was reading the newspaper one morning, which is a little odd for a Sunday morning fifth grader, but I remember turning to my mom and telling her I was going to UW, and I mean, obviously I was reading something in the newspaper about UW, and she kind of just smiled at me and said, sure, whatever, that's fine. And neither of my parents have four-year college degrees, so it wasn't really something that was necessarily on the radar as you have to go do this. And so I was like, that's nice, that's good. She remembers this as well. And anyhow, so I came here for undergrad, and I just loved it. And I love being surrounded by all the smart people. I love the community. I come from West Bend, which is Glenn Grothman country, and so West Bend is sort of the opposite of Madison. And so I felt great being here. And after I finished, I actually bought a condo in Madison. And so for me, going to grad school anywhere else would have been nearly impossible, given the fact that I owed more on my condo than it was worth, so mm-hmm. selling it wasn't an option. And I actually really wasn't sure that I was going to come to grad school. I actually started preparing for the Chem GRE as well as the MCAT, and then I found out you had to actually have taken biology in order to go to med school, so that ended that. And I applied to exactly one grad school and managed to get in, which was kind of amazing mm-hmm. because I did 0 hours of undergrad research, and I really had no business applying at UW, but it worked out okay in the end, so I guess that's fine. And so by clerical error or random chance, I ended up getting in, and I was thrilled because I didn't have to move. I could just, you know, sort of stay put and carry on with life. My sister and brother-in-law live in Madison, and so I wasn't really interested in ditching.
Okay. All right. That certainly works. You've mentioned that you are studying chemistry, but what was it that initially drew you to having this background in chemistry, even if you had no lab work?
I decided in about the eighth grade that chemistry was going to be my thing, mm-hmm. and I just kind of always knew that. I'm not sure what it is exactly drew me to chemistry, but I knew as a third grader that science was going to be my thing, and eventually that sort of went through phases of physics and astronomy and kind of led to chemistry. And I was absolutely sure coming here as an undergrad that I was going to be a chem major, because I love the puzzles and the understanding of the world that you can get from chemistry that you can't find in other subject materials. Hey, Nick.
All right, I'm starting a new tape. This is Megan Flater. It is December 17th, 2012, and I am still interviewing Brian Esselman regarding his experiences at the 2011 Capitol protests regarding the budget repair bill. And Brian, you were talking about what drew you to chemistry. I don't know if you have anything you wanted to add to that.
Oh, I found the study of it just really interesting because it was the first time I sort of understood why things happened. And, you know, I definitely am biased towards the type of puzzles and problems that you can solve that actually have something that approaches a reasonable answer that you can, you know, develop a model for and you can, you know, apply to other contexts and you can start to get some understanding of how the universe actually works. And, you know, I could have studied astronomy, I could have studied physics and answered the same general questions, but for whatever reason, I loved organic chemistry, and I loved the structures and the how different structures and orbitals led to different reactivities and kind of the puzzles that grow out of that. Which, so for me, teaching that now is kind of an ideal setting.
Great. So you do study organic chemistry. What is it in particular that you have been researching here at UW-Madison?
My research is sort of an odd set of stuff. I, on paper, got my PhD in the organic division doing organic chemistry, but I doubt most organic chemists would hear what I did and decide that I was an organic chemist, because usually people think of organic chemistry as people who are in the lab doing reactions and producing new molecules or producing better ways to make known molecules or developing new reactions and new synthetic techniques, and so they're actually using chemicals. I did all of my research either computationally, using computers to model various molecules, or in the gas phase, often in electric discharges, which are essentially the spectrometer that I helped build and helped program, which is a large part of my thesis, is essentially a giant neon lamp that we can pass molecules through to see how they interact. And so it's very kind of messy, dirty chemistry where you're sort of blowing molecules apart, and not the sort of stuff that you typically think of for drug development and new pharmaceuticals and molecules that people want to build to mimic a natural product or to make an actual natural product. So I was a little bit in an odd subset, and I attended a number of astrochemistry meetings, and a lot of the molecules we studied were of astrochemical relevance. And right now there are about 170 known molecules in space, and we are trying to do some of the lab work connected to the radio astronomy detection. And so that's what our spectrometer was built for, and it does millimeter wave spectroscopy. And so I spent a lot of time studying that, and I also looked at modeling reactions that are of astrochemical relevance or relevant to soot formation, these were all things that were great because they built on my third grade love of astronomy, which hasn't diminished at all. But it also sort of allowed me to play around with how structures and orbitals and the way the atoms are arranged in a molecule determine its stability and its reactivity. And so that was kind of fun, and I just really enjoyed it. And I found a great research group that really fit what I was interested in, and I ended up doing a lot more physical chemistry than most organic chemists, and a lot less actual in the lab mixing chemicals together. And I joke around with a lot of the undergrads taking the introductory organic lab that they're doing more actual wet chemistry than I did in my entire PhD, which then they just look at me weird, but that's fine.
Okay, great. You did mention your thesis. My understanding is that you have completed, or you're very near to completing
your
thesis?
I'm done. Finished, I believe I defended on August 14th of this year, and I deposited on the 17th, and I started in this position as the lecturer and assistant organic lab director the following Monday.
Congratulations.
So I took a weekend off, and it was great.
Okay, good for you. What was your thesis named, or can you, you know, perhaps in a few sentences explain what it was that you were researching?
I don't remember what it was named, but I could probably
That's great.
That's funny that I don't remember the name of it, but it was a computational and spectroscopic investigation of species of astrochemical relevance.
Excellent.
But basically, the first couple of chapters looked at how fullerenes, C60 and C70, might be formed from carbon. And so this is relevant for combustion flames as well as the astrochemical sort of world, because there are plenty of carbon-containing molecules in interstellar gas clouds. And in the last couple of decades, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are large benzene-like molecules with multiple rings, have been implicated as explaining the Dibbs phenomenon, which means nothing to someone outside of astronomy. But there were some what are referred to as diffuse interstellar bands, or some very weak absorption lines that were noticed in a woman's PhD thesis, and I can't remember her name, in the 1920s. And since then, no one's been able to explain the source of these lines. And there have been numerous attempts to explain them, and the most recent is these PAHs. And they've since detected a couple of fullerenes in space, C60 and C70, but no one's really sure how we go from carbon atoms and small carbon fragments to these giant fullerenes, nanotubes, the same sort of idea. And these are also found in combustion flames. Like, you just burn carbon, you get this stuff. And no one really understands how you get from these small particles to these giant things. And eventually they form chains, and then they start forming loops, and then magically you get fullerenes out. And so we were taking a look at studying a small chunk of the best proposed model that's out there for how these form. And they go through some intermediates that we try to model and try to understand. And basically the summation of my first two chapters is the best model that's out there, the coalescing and annealing model, has a big flaw with one of the species that they propose as an intermediate, because it's not stable enough to do what they propose that it does. The next chapter I was looking at the formation of a very small molecule, which is a dimer of carbon monoxide and nitrogen, which we propose is a molecule likely to be found in the interstellar medium. It's a nitrogen analog of a molecule that's already there, so we suspect that. And our group developed a proposed way to synthesize it. We were beat by some Germans to the actual synthesis, but I studied computationally how the explosive precursor could make this explosive molecule, and I was fascinated by it because you can take an explosive molecule and pass it through a glass tube at 400 Celsius, and another explosive molecule shoots out the other end. The fact that it didn't completely blow apart was just mind-boggling to me. And then my next two chapters were all about the building and upgrading of a rotational spectrometer and using it on a test molecule called pyridazine, which is essentially benzene with two CHs substituted for two nitrogens. Benzene can't be detected in space by the normal means because it doesn't have a dipole moment. It's a completely symmetric ring structure. Causes cancer, it's terrible, it's awful, but it's like the prototypical and most important aromatic molecule in all of organic chemistry, so it'd be really exciting to find benzene in space, but you really can't deal with that.
All right, this is Megan Flater. It's December 17th, 2012, and I am in the middle of interviewing Brian Esselman regarding the protests against the budget repair bill at the Wisconsin State Capitol in 2011. And Brian was discussing his thesis for UW-Madison chemistry. Did you have more to add to that, Brian?
No, just, okay. Well, maybe a little bit. The reason we were doing the rotational spectroscopy is we think pyridazine would be a great space molecule that someone's going to detect, and it's essentially just like benzene, but it has a dipole moment, so you can actually detect it. And then sort of the culmination of my thesis and how it relates to the teaching work that I did is my final chapter of my thesis, a little unusual for a chemistry thesis. I talked about how in the last 3 years of my degree I worked with the organic lab director to incorporate molecular modeling, which is a sort of PChem theory topic, into the organic experimental undergrad course, and sort of detailed exactly the curriculum that we developed, what the students are working on, what they're learning about the structure of molecules, and both their molecular and electronic structures. And so I've managed to replace NMR spectroscopy being the most loathed part of Chem 344 by students because it's really hard with molecular modeling. So I guess that's my achievement there. And so that's the final bit of my thesis.
Great. As a graduate student here at UW-Madison, with whom did you study?
Bob McMahon and Claude Woods. Robert McMahon is about to be our new department chair, he has a research group in specifically really reactive and high-energy species in the organic world, but he sort of straddles organic and pchem. Claude Woods is a well-known name in the rotational spectroscopy world, and he sort of was the pioneer of molecular spectroscopy of ions in the gas phase, and did a lot of work in the 70s and 80s in that area, and had a spectrometer that we sort of brought back up to the modern world and replaced a computer from 1982. And no one should be using computers from 1982. I worked with both of them quite extensively. And I officially was advised by Bob McMahon, but Claude Woods was just as much a part of my work.
Okay. Thank you. You were involved in protests in 2011.
Yes.
Was that your first foray into labor or political activism?
I actually was a member of WEAC for a while, but I wouldn't consider that political activism because I have long avoided joining or doing anything anything throughout my school days as well as my undergraduate time. If there was a group to join, I intentionally avoided joining it. So I was a little surprised to find myself involved in any sort of organized protest. It's not the first time that I've on the Madison campus been involved in a rally or two for various causes, but this was certainly the first time that I was involved in any sort of prolonged, it was just a couple of weeks worth of yelling about something and protesting. So this was new for me in a lot of ways.
Do you recall, you mentioned you were involved in a few different rallies while being on the UW-Madison campus. Do you recall the nature of any of those?
I honestly don't. It feels like 1,000 years ago.
Okay.
So a decade ago at least.
This would be in relation then, or in regards
to my
undergrad.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Don't really remember.
That's fair. These are details from a while ago. Do you recall when you first associated with the TAA?
I do. When I was here starting my time in grad school, they made a presentation as part of our TA training and orientation in the chemistry department. And I'd been a member of WEAC, so for me being in a union as a teacher made sense, and so I filled out the TAA membership card without really thinking about it or caring too much about it one way or the other. Living up to my standard of avoiding things, I avoided the free t-shirt because I didn't want the free t-shirt, and I didn't want to in any way be a part of anything.
Okay. All right,
No real good reason there.
Okay. Thank you. When was it that you did become more involved in the TAA, if you were initially less inclined to be joining activities?
Oh, I was definitely recruited into the TAA by Scott Walker, and that's the line I've used more than once, in the sense that I found myself down at the protests without really any understanding of what the TAA was doing or that the TAA was even involved in the protests. I mean, in the first couple of days, I learned what an important role the TAA had played in getting things rolling and occupying the Capitol and sort of taking over one of the conference rooms for that purpose. But I showed up down there on the second or third day of the large protesting with a bunch of other folks from the chem department, pretty upset about what was going on, from both upset about what was going on to collective bargaining, what was going on to the university, but mostly it was, we saw this as hurting schools pretty badly, and so we were kind of motivated. And then I discovered that there were TAA folks all over the place down there, and sort of ended up connecting with a few of them. But again, I avoided any real being involved in anything. I did pick up trash an awful lot, and I liked that.
Okay.
For me, it was something I could do that definitely contributed without me having to actually do anything.
Okay, thank you. So, let's see. How was it that you first learned about the budget repair bill or that there were protests occurring at the Capitol?
I think the first thing I heard was local news. I read the Capitol Times on a daily basis, so I suspect it was either the Capitol Times or someone on Facebook or somewhere pointed me toward that, but if I didn't hear about it from there, that was probably the next place I went to take a look.
Okay.
Sounds about right.
All right, thank you. And you mentioned that you first went to the Capitol with a few colleagues. Is this something that you and these colleagues were discussing here in the in your chemistry building, or do you have a sense for how it was that you and these colleagues went to the Capitol together?
I don't entirely know. I mean, we talked about politics as part of talking about life and other things on and off, but it was me and a couple of lab mates from the same research group ended up down here, down at the Capitol. And over the course of the several weeks, I ended up dragging, sometimes enthusiastically, sometimes half-heartedly, almost all of my friends and family at one time or another. So, sure, at some point I was like, hey, let's go do this, and some folks came along.
Okay.
But I ended up seeing a lot of chemists from the building down at the protests, both professors as well as graduate students. We typically weren't, you know, overly involved in the TAA or connected to the TAA, but that certainly didn't mean we weren't down there yelling at the governor.
Right. Okay. So, let's see. For a follow-up question, I know you almost certainly can't name everyone who you've mentioned was involved in protests at the Capitol, but do you recall any other professors or graduate students who were particularly involved in going to the Capitol?
Particularly involved in that we're down there several times protesting.
Sure.
One of my lab mates, Brent Hamburger, and I were both down there, and like one of the reasons I remember that so well is that we ended up having hundreds to maybe thousands of people wanting to take pictures of our protest signs, which was kind of funny and weird. And eventually, Brent ended up in a picture with a bunch of the Yoon Group folks, Teshik Yoon's research group, which got back to some folks at Chemical and Engineering News. And my version of the same sign ended up on BuzzFeed.com. And so there was, that was sort of all around. But I ended up, Brent and I both ended up getting interviewed by someone from Chemical and Engineering News because they just wanted to know why, as chemists, we were involved in the protests and what our deal was. But in response to Governor Walker's statement about just calling out the National Guard if the prison guards went on strike as a result of the collective bargaining issues, our sign said something to the effect of, can the National Guard teach organic chemistry? And so I learned an important lesson. If you're going to a protest, have a witty, funny sign and have it be about chemistry, and then, you know, everyone get all excited about it. It's really weird. I was sort of stunned by the fact that people were as impressed by my poorly put together sign as they were. But yeah, so Brent and I were down there doing that, and having a good time.
Okay, thank you. While you were not very involved with the organizational elements of the TAA, you did end up doing trash duty. How was it that you came to start working with either the TAA or the infrastructure that was put in place at the Capitol?
That's a tough question. It was such a strange time and so fluid, and everything was so chaotic that it was hard to sort of nail down exactly how different relationships and connections sort of grew up. There were folks that I saw every day down at the protests, and we would chit-chat about life and other things, and must have had my picture taken with some of them, because they're the folks with the more clever signs over and over again. These people would come up and be like, oh, can we get a picture of you two? And so the guy wearing the candy and I must have been together in about 100 photos. I don't even remember the guy's name, but he was nice and we chatted. I ended up getting some emails from the TAA about various general membership meetings and important discussions about having a teach out about, what potential actions the group was taking. And at this point, I was motivated enough to actually attend a GMM. For the record, I hate GMMs, but that's sort of universal, I think. So I showed up. I brought some of the other chemists along that had been protesting with me, and I really wasn't part of the hierarchy or in any way connected to anyone who was. So I was sort of an outsider in the group in, I think, every way possible, which I, again, was my preference, and I liked that. But I wanted to help in some fashion, so I kept asking around for, what needs to be done, and someone's like, we need people volunteering to collect trash. I will do that. At some point, they needed someone to be a marshal of a march, and I said, sure, I'll do that. That's no problem. But I liked those sort of clear-cut tasks of, we need someone to do this thing, because that's sort of what I'm okay at. I didn't really have any desire to be involved further than that, but I was certainly, willing to take part in that. And I thought it was important for sort of PR that as we were occupying the Capitol, we didn't trash the Capitol, and it was absolutely clear that after the fact the Republicans tried to use that as a negative PR attack on us, but I knew, because I was one of the people walking around collecting trash on multiple days, there really wasn't any, because there were days I had trouble finding the trash to pick up. So I think we did a pretty nice job of caretaking, so I helped out with that, attended a bunch of meetings, listened to a lot of people argue. Sometimes sensibly, other times just seemingly for the sake of it. So it was my first real experience in democracy in all of its sausage-making glory. It was pretty intense at times. And it was certainly something that the chemists in the room really felt was not our style of communication. And in a very obvious way, and I felt this way at all the GMM and sort of democracy discourse events that I've been at. We typically don't communicate like that. And our focus is also tend to be different in the way we dialogue and the interactions that we have. And so both for good and for bad, I don't necessarily think that we're doing things the right way, but sort of the using Robert's rules to discuss, issues when having long speakers lists and everyone contributing something, and these in-depth discussions really aren't something that we typically experience. And our discussions are more generally focused on like action items and, okay, we're wanting to do this, what are we going to do? Okay, this is how we do it. Let's move on. And they're a lot more concise and more structured and more focused. But certainly not designed to hear from everyone's voice and make sure that everyone's contributions are being acknowledged. And so on some more intellectual level, I see the value in the the democratic process and the way in which decisions were made both then as well as later in the TAA. And, but I always felt like it wasn't my way of talking, or and I didn't feel like it was something that felt natural and normal to me. And I certainly wasn't the only chemist who felt that way. We would talk about it afterward and be like, yeah, that's not our room. So.
Okay. Thank you. You mentioned that you've been attending some GMMs and other meetings, and the GMM would be the general membership meetings of the TAA. Okay. Were there other types of meetings for the TAA or for other organizations that you were attending as well, or were they primarily TAA meetings?
And I didn't attend anything before the February protests, but afterward I've been attending many of the general membership meetings. I found my way accidentally, I swear, onto the Stewards Council, and I ended up attending a lot of STUCO meetings, where, again, things were discussed sometimes more than I cared to talk about them, but being someone who's a talker myself, I never felt like I could be too bothered by that. I ended up working for sort of representing the TAA in the HR redesign process. I was one of the TAA members who was part of the HR redesign, which was sort of an awkward offshoot of the Capitol protest, which in many ways felt connected, even though it was sort of its own distinct thing, but it certainly came out of early Walker administration decisions. And it was a little bit interesting being asked by the TAA to be a part of that, because I really, at the time, still saw myself completely as an outsider, and certainly continued to view myself as that. But I did that, helped out with some recruitment and orientation, and did tabling for various things. The thing that I was been most involved in since the protests was the tabling for recall signatures. I did that several days and took more time off of research to go make sure that happened. I think that sums up most of my TAA involvement. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. You mentioned that you likely learned about the budget repair bill through Facebook and through the Capitol Times. When you actually began going to the Capitol to participate in protests, how was it that you followed any news events or updates that were related to either the budget repair bill or to the protests?
Well, since I never stayed there the whole time, and I was, as a TA, well, I need to back up just a little bit to explain how I did that, to put it in context. So as people were talking about the having a teach out and, you know, taking their students down to the Capitol and holding classes down there, and other people holding classes in coffee shops and going off campus, I found that comical and stupid. Because as a chemist, the thought of doing that makes zero sense whatsoever, and everyone was talking about it as if it was like this plausible thing that the whole campus could do, and I just found it like laughable, because I'm sure in a sociology class or a history class, you can sort of finagle your lesson plan a little bit to make that a reasonable move. Since I was at that point a lab TA funded by the MIU, which is the Madison Initiative for Undergraduates, which gave the chem department money for both additional TAs for certain courses where students traditionally struggled, as well as money for improving curriculum and curriculum redesign. I was, during that time, teaching the students about how to use molecular modeling in organic chemistry, which in the course of a week I gave over 10 lectures on that. In the midst of protesting down at the Capitol. So I got a lot of walking in and found out exactly how long it took me to get to the Capitol from the Chem building. And I was able to schedule things pretty well. But I was sort of heavily involved in the most intense part of my teaching for the semester at the same time as all the Capitol protests were going on and the teach-out was going on. And I certainly wasn't going to, there was no physical way for me to alter my plans, and to have not gone and taught, I would have derailed the entire laboratory semester. And the laboratory director was obviously very appreciative that I didn't not teach it, because I was, at that point, was the only one who had any experience doing so and was only the only one available to do that. I did include an extra slide in my PowerPoint slideshow of, you know, I'm supporting the teach out even though I'm here, and then immediately moved on to the next slide. I didn't want to make a big deal about the politics of it in the organic chem phys-org or educational setting, but didn't want to make it seem like I wasn't supportive. And so it was sort of my way to not make a political decision by being silent, but also not put the politics sort of in front of the learning that was going on. But so I was doing that at the same time, and heading back and forth to the Capitol many, many trips. And because I was going back and forth so much, I was able to check the internet back in my office on a routine basis. I made tons of phone calls to friends and family around the country, sort of keeping in touch that way. I was checking the nightly news every night when I went home. I usually was sort of at the Capitol in the morning, went back to teach, came back to the Capitol midday, went back to teach, came back at night. I was never even close to deciding it'd be a good idea to sleep in the Capitol. That's beyond me. I did get to know the woman who worked at the parking garage late at night next to the one next to the Great Dane, which was my usual place of parking. And we would chit-chat on my way out every night about the protests and how things were going, and she recognized me from day to day and was asking questions. And so we talked for a few minutes every time I left the garage, and she still works there, and I say hi to her when I'm going through, which I tend to park there a lot when I'm downtown. The Great Dane sponsors the Frisbee League that I'm in, so I tend to go to the Great Dane on a lot of occasions. And so I still see the woman there, and it's kind of neat that, you know, we connected during the protests, and I'm sure at this point she doesn't remember me, but, you know, I remember that she was the one working there every night, so I made sure to talk to her a little bit.
Thank you.
You've mentioned following the news during the course of the protest. You've probably seen retrospective since then as well. Do you feel that the media offered accurate, inaccurate depictions of the protests? What's your thought on that?
Well, it depends on which news source you went to.
Okay.
I mean, obviously there were news sources that were very favorable. I mean, Ed Schultz, Rachel Maddow, of course, on their shows were overly, you know, supportive, and I was actually standing behind Tammy Baldwin with my protest sign on the Rachel Maddow show, and when she was giving her interview, and we were, you know, cheering for Tammy, and my mom even saw me and my sign and called me right after. She was so excited. But I was also checking Fox News' website that whole time just to get a sense of how it was being portrayed in other news sources, which was really, really funny, because they were describing things that I was not witnessing. I mean, they were describing the destroying of the Capitol and the crazy protests and violence, and they were describing all these riots that were taking place. And at first my mother was concerned that I was going to get arrested and also I was going to get killed in a riot, at which point I told her it was safer than the farmers market. And I mean, I've never seen so many people down at the Capitol behaving so respectfully and nicely. I mean, it really was, on a day there was over 100,000 people, less chaotic and more pleasant and polite than a normal Madison farmers market. And I'm sure since no one was arrested, there had to be fewer arrests than at a normal farmer's market day. So, but that certainly wasn't how it was being portrayed on the conservative news stations. In terms of the actual message and the issues at hand, I think all of the news sources had trouble distilling why the protests were happening into good news sound bites. Because at first they were all talking about how, you know, we were doing this because of the pay cuts and the money cuts. And certainly that was a big part of it. But you had statements coming out of all of the major unions. They were willing to accept some financial concessions, they were willing to accept pay cuts, but they weren't willing to lose collective bargaining, and that's what they were going to stand for. But that wasn't the focus of the news cycles in the first couple of days. It was all about the budget cuts and the money that was being taken away. And it made it, while it may have been accurate that that's part of the motivation, it wasn't the sole motivation. And the unions, you know, very clearly declared that in a lot of their statements, and eventually that started getting out there, and I noticed that more of that was getting attention several days into the protest as opposed to earlier where it was all about the money. And I think it's easier for people to understand that we'd be upset about losing money than these nebulous collective bargaining rights that most people don't really understand, even if they have them. Certainly less so if they don't have them, what they really are and what they really mean. And so I think that was harder for the news sources to sort of put out there. But as time went on, I think they did a pretty reasonable job of describing why collective bargaining mattered to the people who were protesting, you know, what the protests were about, the fact that they were nonviolent protests, that there were not large numbers of people getting arrested for doing crazy things in the Capitol. It was a pretty calm and but yet energetic environment. I mean, and that's what you'd expect when you had tens of thousands of elementary school teachers protesting. Of course it would be orderly and people would, you know, be respectful. And I'm surprised that we weren't all getting in line to go to the bathroom or something. You know, it was pretty remarkable.
Okay. Thank you. You've mentioned this a little bit already when you talked about the teaching responsibilities that you had during the course of the protests at the Capitol. Did you find it difficult to budget your time while protesting? Was this something that perhaps was not an issue for you? Or?
Oh, I definitely budgeted my time very poorly. So I found myself in this new steward's role for one thing, which I hadn't been expecting. And so I actually met with the executive director of our department, as well as the current chair of our department, and a couple of the lab directors were worried that all of the lab TAs were going to disappear. And you know, so I met with them to sort of, you know, calm their fears that we weren't necessarily going to be destroying a semester's worth of curriculum, because in the lab sense, as packed as our labs are, if a lab doesn't run, it can't be made up, it can't be fixed, that learning is just gone. And it's not, the curriculum is dense enough and timed and sequenced enough that if it doesn't happen, well, it just doesn't happen. And there's sort of a general arrangement made for most of the lab TAs that if they wanted to go to the protest and wanted to, you know, walk out and not be part of teaching that day as part of one of the teach-outs, that they could find someone else to cover them, or a couple of lab directors stepped up and covered some sections. Like I said, I kept teaching all of the stuff that I was doing. But I really got no research done for that 2+ weeks. My research advisor was very supportive to my involvement in the protest, so he kind of looked the other way about me taking a little time out of my day to go yell. The other thing I had kind of going for me was that I was in my fourth year of grad school, and at that point had accomplished a lot of work and a lot of research, and my advisor always gave me leeway to do any sort of side project that I wanted. And so he kind of treated this as another one of my little side project endeavors. And I mean, he sort of viewed me as one of his more productive and active grad students, and so he gave me a little bit of flexibility in a lot of cases because I was getting enough done, and so he really wasn't too worried about it. While I was writing my thesis, I was serving on this HR redesign committee, and I ran that by him ahead of time because it was a big time sink that semester, but he really had no qualms about that. I got involved in some of the curriculum rewriting and TA training and various things like that that were definitely not part of my job duties, and certainly were getting in the way of my research, which is, you know, of course, king. But he didn't really mind that I sort of got involved in that, and I think this sort of fell for him in the same general area. And I really appreciated it my whole time in grad school working for Bob, that he really let me chart my own path in a lot of ways. And I felt that this was important, so I took time out to do it. Unfortunately, immediately, as probably a result of me protesting, I got a respiratory infection and was feverish and quite sick for several days. So as the protests were winding down, I was, well, at home in bed and quite sick for a good week or so. So my research didn't get done that week either. And then I took a spring break vacation to Hawaii, and so I didn't really do anything then either. So there was a good 4-ish week stretch where I didn't really do a whole lot. And the good news is, I'd already put in a lot of extra time and a lot of hours, so it didn't really matter too much in the grand scheme of things. But I certainly was neglecting normal daily tasks, as was everybody else who was down there. I mean, you couldn't have been at the protests not taking time from something else. all of us were doing something we normally don't do, because generally on a weekday you don't see 80,000 people at the Capitol. It'd be hard for the world to function if that was the case.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any other strong memories of being at the Capitol that you've not shared yet?
I have lots of strong memories that I think are going to stick with me for a long time. Seeing the just massive numbers of people densely packed into the rotunda, into like every possible balcony, all chanting and singing and, you know, excited and showing a sort of solidarity for a cause, as well as, you know, firefighters coming through and the police officers coming through and all the different groups of elementary school teachers and the various, you know, tractors, the taxis, all of the different unions that weren't necessarily getting affected by collective bargaining showing up, all the just general citizens showing up who weren't directly getting impacted by collective bargaining but were mad about, you know, services getting cut, about Badger Care, about all the potential things that were getting hit. I'd never been part of a crowd of people that were sort of focused on one thing and all sort of in joint effort. And the fact that it was so peaceful and so cordial for so long was kind of stunning to me. I mean, I haven't been in a sporting event where, you know, people were that cordial. You know, the only other crowds that I've been in that big were in Camp Randall at Badger games, and certainly they're not quite the same atmosphere. So I definitely remember that. I'll remember all of the people I knew from previous places and other in my past that sort of came together independently, and we ran into each other down at the Capitol and sort of rekindled some connections, which was kind of neat. That's the bulk of it, but certainly something I'm not going to forget.
Thank you. Let's see. What are your future plans at this point, academically?
I don't know. am likely to sort of stay put in the job that I'm in because I really like it. There's a potential postdoc opportunity, but I probably am going to sit here for a while. I don't know long-term what that means, but I really enjoy the lecturing that I did this semester and the teaching. I feel like I did a pretty solid job my first time teaching a large lecture course and teaching sort of new material from a lecturing standpoint, but certainly not from a standpoint of being a TA or as a student in the past, because I'm actually finishing a semester of lecturing a course that I TA'd for several times and I took as a student years ago. So I'm kind of familiar with it, but it's different from the other perspective. And I'd like to, you know, sort of continue on and do a great job at it at some point. I'll give myself kind of a B for the semester, but not really content with that. So I want to keep doing that. There's a lot of use to the department. I think I can be in the assistant lab director role things I have on the list of to-do but haven't quite gotten to yet. So I think I'll stay in this position for a while.
Okay.
But I don't really know.
All right. Thank you. Politically, do you have plans to remain involved with the TEA or with perhaps it would be more of a staff or professor level organization?
Well, I keep getting all of the TAA emails, and I quit going to GMMs before I stopped being a TA. I eventually just couldn't handle it anymore. The environment was just far too stressful and acrimonious. And it was all people who wanted to do good, but had very different ideas of how we could interact with Wisconsin politics to push forward a progressive agenda and something that was supporting of union rights. And I was just done. And I sent what Claiborne described as a Dear John letter to the TAA after one of the GMMs, where I said, you know, I will happily continue to be a member, I'll do my Stewards Council thing, but I will never attend another GMM. I think the TAA hasn't come to grips with the changes of the budget repair bill in its entirety. The TAA historically has been a small collection of activists and a large collection of members who didn't do anything or care, of which I was one of those folks. But as dues are no longer being collected by the university, and we no longer have fair share dues required of non-union members to support the collective bargaining part of the relationship between the TAA and the university, the TAA needs to change its operation, because it actually needs to be in some ways engaged in PR to attract members in a way that it never had to. And certainly in the short term, the sort of activist core of folks who had been used to making decisions based on who shows up and used to making decisions based on, you know, who's going to attack this problem, whatever the problem is, now needs to start thinking about how to make a broader appeal to grad students. And certainly this is a new issue and something that needs to be negotiated about. You know, how much do you cater to people who don't show up at meetings in hopes that they'll continue to support the organization and pay dues? And how much do you cater to the folks who show up and lend their voice and will lend their time to causes? And so I saw a lot of the issues that people were pushing as disenfranchising to the potential membership that we could recruit in some of our more progressive stances that were taken in the spring elections and in the summer elections. And I'm not sure that as we were going through the recalls and going through the recall election of the governor, that we were looking toward the sort of growth of the organization now that we had to be concerned about its growth. And I just felt really frustrated by the lack of concern about how we sound in the broader local press as well as what our members think we're doing. And I heard a lot of comments from people who knew I was active in the TAA about us not endorsing a candidate for governor. And that was sort of a shocking thing to people. And I said, well, I tried to vote for us endorsing someone. And that was sort of an example of, that was a very acrimonious debate on both sides of, you know, supporting or not supporting. And I just felt like a lot of the solidarity and unity that came through with the governor as our direct enemy, you know, at the protests where we had a clearly defined opposition sort of broke down over the next year and a half. Good, well-intentioned folks having very different priorities and sort of mindsets sort of caused a little bit more of a fracture within the TAA. And at one point, it got too stressful for me. I mean, I don't deal well with conflict. That's part of why the seeing the guts of the democracy isn't as enjoyable of an experience for me as I think it is for some of the other folks, or a lot of the folks who are used to that discourse, who just don't seem to mind the intensity. It's not really my thing. So I sort of bowed out at that point from any sort of directly being involved. But since I graduated and am no longer employed as a TA, I've continued to pay my TAA dues. And I actually just checked on that with Rob a few days ago. So I'm still a dues-paying member of the TAA, and I plan to be for the foreseeable future, although I will love the TAA from afar and be happy that I am never at a GMM, and happy to sort of help the labor movement from the sidelines, because you know, I think the TAA provides a really strong voice locally about the way the campus is impacting local politics and represents the graduate students but the larger campus community in a very important way, and has an important opposition role to play in both opposition to the administration on various issues as well as opposition to the state government. That being said, I want to stay as far away from the organization in terms of decision making as possible. Which partially is related to my longstanding bias of not joining things, but in this case I'm pretty happy to be a sort of dues-paying member without actually contributing.
Okay, thank you. Mentioned that in sending an email to the TAA after attending your last GMM, that you had sent what amounted to a Dear John letter. And this was Claiborne Hill who described that?
Yeah, she described it as that.
Okay.
There was a number of folks that I felt comfortable sort of voicing my concerns about the where the TAA was headed and in terms of how it was talking amongst itself. And she was someone that I felt very comfortable sending it to. I mean, there are numerous leadership folks in the TAA that I felt very comfortable talking to, so there's a group of maybe six or seven people I fired that off to. And in fact, I was contacted a little while later by some folks who were very like-minded and wanted to have a dialogue about how we were talking, and which is a little bit too meta for most chemists to be talking about talking. But I spent some time in the School of Ed, so I was a little more used to that, possibly. There were some discussions maybe late spring, early summer this year about sort of the future of the TAA and how we bridge the divide between some of the more acrimonious folks, not sort of one Venn diagram of folks, as well as just generally some people with different ideologies and different perspectives, neither of which I could necessarily fault or, you know, think are great. I just it's going to be a struggle for the organization to deal with the aftermath. And I think that was one of the long-term consequences of the budget repair bill that, you know, maybe were foreseeable, but I don't think a lot of us were focused on. And one of the ways that I think Scott Walker succeeded in weakening the TAA from one perspective is we now spend a lot more time having to collect dues, which we knew was going to happen, a lot more time trying to convince people to be in the TAA, which in the past, convincing them to be in the TAA was kind of revenue neutral in some sense. Now it's revenue critical. But we also, because money is now an issue and membership's now an issue, maybe some of the intensity of the discussions about, you know, where does the organization go, take on a little bit more of a meaning and lead to a more intense discussion, which, you know, we're now spending energy and time doing. And so in terms of Governor Walker being successful, he was very successful at causing the union all sorts of issues and weakening it in various senses. In the other sense, though, he actually strengthened, for a lot of folks, a commitment to progressive issues and a commitment to union and labor politics. And so I think there was a strengthening of resolve for a lot of folks, but as an organization, as a whole, it was certainly a blow, and he was successful at hitting us pretty hard. Which kind of sounds depressing when I put it that way.
Thank you. I'm certainly not going to ask you to identify those in the TA who you might identify as being more acrimonious than others, but do you recall who was involved in this overture to create a dialogue about how it was that people in the TA were talking to one another?
Oh. Wow, that's embarrassing. Who set that up? Well, we met with the co-presidents, the newly elected co-presidents at the time. Jay was one of the folks. I know his last name, but it's escaping me at the moment. And there were Margaret and a couple others, but apparently this semester is erased the rest of names, but there were some folks involved. And certainly in all of our heated debates at GMMs, there wasn't one side that was immune to being acrimonious or, you know, certainly one side responsible. I mean, we forgot to use our seminar voices, I think, and our seminar diplomacy. There was pretty widespread.
Okay, thank you. Do you wish to share any final thoughts about the protests or about your experience?
No.
We've covered it.
I think I told most of it. I mean, if you have any other questions, I can answer them. But.
No, I think you provided me with really interesting information, and I wanted to thank you for sitting down today with me to talk about the protests.
No problem.
Thank you.